Hi, this is Jim Paoletti, clinical consultant for Power to Practice. In this podcast, I'd like to address some of the common issues or problems that you see with patients that are associated with BHRT. There are often symptoms or issues seen in patients that come to you originally for balancing their hormones. They can include things like menstrual cramps, menorrhea, migraines, constipation, fibrocystic breast, uterine fibroids, PCOS, acne, general aches and pains. I'd like to spend just a little time talking with you about how I approach some of these common issues in addition to balancing the systemic hormones. Let's tackle constipation first. Many patients do not even realize what good bowel habits are. I've heard it stated that one should pass at least 12 inches of stool every 24 hours. I've had patients tell me that yes, my bowel movements are regular, and then I ask them how often, and they say they pass a stool once every 2 or 3 days. I tell patients that pooping and peeing are healthy, and that they should pass a formed stool 2 or 3 times a day if consuming a regular diet. Constipation, of course, can be caused by low thyroid function, but there are a number of other causes, including dehydration, low fiber intake, low stomach acid, dysbiosis, sluggish bile flow, medications, diabetes, high calcium levels, lack of exercise, and simply resisting the urge. Symptoms include abdominal bloating and distension, difficulty passing stools, cramps, abdominal pain, nausea, and vomiting. Remedies start with adequate hydration. The number of ounces that should be consumed daily is half the patient's weight in pounds. Also, they may need to increase their physical activity. They should consume a high-fiber diet. Include dietary fiber carbohydrates from plants and whole grains that cannot be digested. Soluble fiber promotes regularity. Soluble fiber also lowers LDL in blood by binding to fatty acids, limiting the amount of cholesterol absorbed. Soluble fiber is further classified as fermentable and non-fermentable, with the fermentable soluble fiber being the one that feeds healthy bacteria. You can also consider use of stool softeners and lactases. I always suggest digestive enzymes and a probiotic for patients suffering with constipation. Coagulogs to stimulate the flow of bile could be used. These include artichoke, dandelion root, rosemary, and sage. Maybe necessary to increase hydrochloric acid production. If they're on acid blocking medication, stop the medication and replace with digestive enzymes before meals. If that alone is not enough, then consider adding hydrochloric acid as betaine hydrochloride. Magnesium is something I give these patients. Now I give here the oxide, magnesium oxide preferred, or maybe the citrate salt, because citrate can be irritating to the GI tract. The objective here is not to absorb the magnesium. I'm not dosing this to dose magnesium levels, but to increase intestinal movement by using a non-well-absorbed magnesium. Peristaltic herbs can be useful, and they include cascara sagrada bark, turkey rhubarb root, and senna. There's a substance called calcium degluconate. It's a phytochemical that helps with retention of glucuronic acid and inhibits enzyme beta-glucuronidase, so it's also used to help improve elimination of estrogens. But assisting in glucuronidation, it helps eliminate conjugated estrogens and toxins and thereby supports detoxification, which can be important in helping treat constipation. I'll move on to fibrocystic breast disease. FBD is a condition in which there are palpable lumps in the breast, and it's usually associated with pain and tenderness, often, most often, fluctuating with the menstrual cycle, and it becomes progressively worse in most patients until they reach menopause. It affects about 50% of women to some degree. A major concern with even mild FBD is that it can mask the signs and symptoms of breast cancer, delaying its diagnosis and treatment. The risk factors associated with fibrocystic breast disease include a high-fat diet, high caffeine intake, low iodine diet or levels, digestive and elimination issues. Women with 3 or less bowel movements weekly are at a higher risk for FBD. Estrogen levels and function appear to play a major role in the development of fibrocystic breast disease, so these risk factors make sense in correlation to estrogen, as all of these factors increase estrogen storage, decrease the metabolism and excretion of estrogen, or increase estrogen receptor sensitivity. So, the treatment of fibrocystic breast disease includes, first of all, diet modification. Eliminate the caffeine. Eliminate high-fat foods. Reduce or eliminate sugar, dairy products, alcohol, tobacco, non-organic meat, saturated fat, and refined salt. Increase things like fiber, fruits, vegetables, and fish. Other treatment strategies include reducing stress if possible, more importantly, addressing the patient's reaction to stress. Patients with fibrocystic breast disease should wear a properly fitted bra and loose-fitting clothing above the waist. And it's important that they maintain regular bowel movements. adequate fiber and water intake because that helps with proper estrogen elimination. Progesterone cream applied topically can also be beneficial. I usually dose 5 to 10 milligrams of progesterone applied to the breast or breast twice a day. If a patient is already using a topical progesterone cream for systemic effect, and then depending upon their strength, I can tell them they can take a small portion of their topical cream and apply it directly to the breast or breast, and then rub in the rest as usual on their arms or thighs. Iodine supplementation is another important factor in fibrocystic breast disease. Iodine replacement has been used to treat it. Iodine affects the estrogen receptor sensitivity. It's also an antioxidant that helps in the metabolism of estrogen. But a lack of iodine increases estrogen proliferation in the breast tissue. In addition, iodine has been shown to alter gene expression in estrogen receptor breast cancer cell lines, which suggests maybe it might be useful as adjunctive therapy in breast cancer therapy. For patients with fibrocystic breast disease or high risk factors for fibrocystic breast disease, I dose iodine at 3 to 6 milligrams daily. Evening primrose oil can help relieve breast pain and tenderness associated with FBD. Evidence has shown that beta carotene is effective in reducing growth of breast cancer cells and may help with fibrocystic breast disease. Vitamin E has been shown to be useful in decreasing the pain and tenderness associated with FBD. And lastly, indole-3-carbinol, I3C, or DIM, both are beneficial because they downregulate expression of estrogen receptor responsible for cell proliferation and also induce liver metabolism and produce more of the 2-hydroxyestrogens, which are the least estrogenic and proliferative estrogen metabolites. I use the product Estrogen by Orthomolecular, which provides 200 milligrams of I3C and 100 milligrams of DIM in one capsule, dosed at 1 daily. Next on my list is menstrual cramps, one of the most common reasons women seek medical attention. Inflammation is a major contributor to menstrual cramps. The uterus secretes prostaglandin during the cycle, causing contractions. Of course, the most effective way to treat menstrual cramps is to prevent them. Suggestions include using a sanitary napkin instead of a tampon. IUDs may need to be removed because they can aggravate cramping. It's important that the patient tries to maintain good posture and spinal alignment because that's been shown to be effective. And it's also important to maintain a heavy weight. Obese women have a much higher incidence of menstrual cramps. Patients need to address stress reaction with the use of daily compensation techniques and possibly adaptogens. It's important that they follow closely an anti-inflammatory diet. Additionally helpful is eating more anti-inflammatory foods like pumpkin seeds, sesame seeds, sunflower seeds, flax seed, and fish high in anti-inflammatory activity like salmon, sardines, herring, halibut, and tuna. Of course, watch the mercury content. I always check these patients for food sensitivities. In individual patients, avoiding certain foods can be very beneficial. I ask patients that are suffering menstrual cramps to try to avoid gluten and dairy and limit sugar and caffeine alcohol for one cycle. Substances can then be added back each month to see what aggravates cramping. I tell them it's important to exercise regularly, not just when they're having cramps. Again, address any possible food sensitivities and poor digestion, because either one can cause swelling and gas that can aggravate cramps. I often suggest that patients with menstrual cramps try adding digestive enzymes before each meal to aid with their digestion. One supplement that I typically use for treating menstrual cramps is magnesium glycinate. Magnesium seems to be especially useful in patients where the cramps respond well to heat. I dose magnesium glycinate at 600 milligrams per day and 600 or 1200 milligrams every 3 to 4 hours while they're experiencing the cramps. Also use evening primrose oil at 500 to 1000 milligrams up to 3 times a day. This is in addition to the fish oil that I have almost all my patients on. And lastly, progesterone cream applied daily during the luteal phase may help. The dose can range anywhere from 5 to 20 milligrams daily, so I usually start out low and then work up. Next on the list is uterine fibroids. The growth of fibroids is thought to be stimulated by estrogens, and fibroids have a higher concentration of estrogen receptors. Fibroids usually on their own will stop growing and regress after menopause as long as there's not estrogen replacement therapy. Symptoms of uterine fibroids can range from being non-existent to things like frequent urination, bloating, backache, leg pain, abdominal bleeding, painful intercourse. The goal of treatment for fibroids is to reduce the proliferation caused by estrogen and reduce the inflammation. Similar to fibrocystic breast disease, the diet should be high in fiber, rich in plant phytoestrogens. which means eat more raw vegetables, garlic, legumes, and whole grains. Again, avoid sugar, alcohol, caffeine, non-organic, non-lean red meat, and saturated fats. Exercise regularly, even if it's just walking or moving around. Practice daily relaxation techniques. The estrogen load can be decreased by considering a liver detoxification. Calcium D-glucarate can be used to help eliminate estrogens, and then I use a probiotic to reduce the reabsorption of unconjugated estrogens. Again, indole-3-carbinol-DIM combination can help reduce the more potent metabolites of estrogen, and green tea, polyphenols in green tea, can block the negative effects of estrogen. Progesterone can be administered. Progesterone administration often results in the stopping growth of the fibroids. If they haven't developed too far, progesterone can stop the growth, and sometimes it even reduces their size. Then eventually fibroids can shrink and disappear when menopause comes. Sometimes at menopause you may have to delay estrogen replacement to allow shrinkage until the patient is asymptomatic. I'd like to spend just a minute talk about menorrhea. Menorrhagia is due to abnormal blood clotting, estrogen dominance, abnormal prostaglandin metabolism, which decreases blood clotting, functional hypothyroidism can be caused by vitamin A deficiency. Again, it can be caused by IUDs, caused by uterine fibroids, endometriosis, pelvic inflammatory disease, or complications of pregnancy. In addition to correcting functional thyroid issues, eliminating cause of excess estrogens, and balancing estrogen physiological progesterone, there are also a number of nutritional treatment options to consider. I tell patients consume more leafy vegetables for their vitamin K content and or supplement vitamin K. In these patients, I usually give them vitamin D3, which has vitamin K in it. Also tell them to follow an anti-inflammatory diet. Vitamin A at 25,000 units twice a day. Ferrous glycinate, if their iron levels are low, I usually give 50 to 100 milligrams of elemental iron daily. Vitamin C, a gram daily, with bioflavonoids, 3 grams daily. Vitamin E at 400 international units, fish oil at 3 to 4 grams daily, and evening primrose oil at 3 capsules daily. A couple more things here, migraines. In addition to avoiding foods that trigger the migraines, I always check these patients for food sensitivities. I often ask the patients to give up gluten for 3 or 4 weeks, and if I don't get the resolution I want, then ask them for an additional 3 or 4 weeks to give up dairy also. Low magnesium levels have been shown to trigger migraines and worsen the vasodilation caused by nitric oxide release. So I dose magnesium at 300 to 600 milligrams daily, either as glycinate, or you can use the malate, taurate, or thionate salts. They're all well absorbed. And then I increase the magnesium dose every week until I reach about 1800 milligrams if needed. Estrogen can affect migraines occurrence by changing the concentration of serotonin, norepinephrine, and opiates in the brain. Low estrogen levels increase sensitivity to pain, and estrogen withdrawal supersensitizes the facial and cranial nerves, lowering migraine threshold. Decreasing estrogen causes prostaglandins released. Obtaining a physiological level of estrogen is important to migraine treatment, but reducing the dose from a superphysiological amount should be done slowly. Riboflavin, vitamin B2 deficiency has been associated with migraine attack. There's at least one study that showed that riboflavin 400 milligrams daily was effective in preventing migraines, reducing both the frequency and intensity of migraines. This high dose, by the way, can be compounded in a single capsule. Note that patients with cataracts should not use high doses of riboflavin. There was a study that suggested that a standardized extract of butterbur is a powerful migraine preventive agent. The dose is 75 milligrams twice daily. I've used 5-hydroxytryptophan, dosed at 100 to 300 milligrams daily, to regulate serotonin levels because that has been shown to reduce frequency and intensity of migraine headaches. I've also had good success with a suppository that we used to compound containing 25 milligrams of endomethacin, 4 milligrams of prochlorperazine, and 75 milligrams of caffeine for migraines. This was originally a product that was made in Italy, and we compounded suppositories here for years for migraines. Understand it is now available as a product called Indoprocaf, I-N-D-O-P-R-O-C-A-F, as an effervescent tablet. And I'm running over on time, so let me quickly discuss PCOS. My suggestion is you treat PCOS as an estrogen and testosterone dominant caused by ovarian dysregulation due to insulin resistance. So treat with an anti-inflammatory diet, give MSM or turmeric as a natural anti-inflammatory, fish oil of course, and most importantly a low glycemic index diet and exercise to reverse the insulin resistance. I hope this helps with these issues. Thanks for listening.